you should know who you're doing business with. And if they don't have the managerial ability or the financial ability to do what it is that they're saying to do, don't give them money. Don't engage in the business. It's pretty simple.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Mark Pierce is an attorney, an accountant, and the owner of Cloud Peak Law. With over three decades of experience, Pierce has truly seen it all, at least from a legal perspective. This is apparent from the diversity of fields in which he's assisted clients over the years. Those fields range from bankruptcy and estate planning to oil and gas and securities. Beyond law, Pierce has flexed his entrepreneurial muscles, scaling a transportation company from $3.2 million in gross revenues to $11.6 million over just a six-year window. He's also assisted in developing and managing a software company from its startup phase in 1986 to acquisition and over $50 million in sales by 1999. Mark, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Sam.
Hey, the pleasure's all mine. Where are you based out of?
Sheridan, Wyoming, north central part of the state, just bordering Montana.
Oh, man, that's a pretty part of the country. Certainly jealous of that. I'm not only jealous of where you're based out of, but really you've got such a diverse background, both in business and in law. This is going to be an interesting conversation I think we're going to have today. It's going to be tough to kind of narrow down where to take this. But the same questions I ask everybody who comes on the show, can you really just briefly tell us where'd you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
Oh, gosh. Well, you know, I started out with a degree in accounting from the University of Wyoming. And I joined a large accountancy firm and I went through their training program and I sat down with them long enough to have a cup of coffee. I didn't like accounting. I just thought it was it wasn't my cup of tea. I admire what accountants do. But at the end of the day, I don't enjoy accounting work. I enjoy talking about accounting work and I enjoy dealing with accounts, but I don't like doing the work itself. So I went to work for an offshore drilling company by the name of Global Marine Drilling in Houston, Texas. And was in their management training program. I spent time in Latin America, South America, and also Southeast Asia. Unfortunately, I injured my back and I couldn't complete that program. So I decided to go to law school. 6 months after I got into law school, the ship that I was on was sunk in a typhoon in the South China Sea, killing two of my friends as well as the entire crew. So that's why I'm here. It's because I've got a bad back.
Wow.
So after I got into law school, I ended up becoming a clerk for the tax professor at the University of Colorado and was published in 1983 with an article in the Colorado the University of Colorado Law Review and got noted as a note editor there. Anyway, so I went on. I went to work for a large firm out of Philadelphia for approximately 5 years. Then I got involved with private equity. And then I got kind of bored doing private equity. So I did my own thing a couple of different times. And then I looked at Wyoming, which is where I was from, decided that's where I wanted to be, went back to Wyoming, said, gee, what can I do for a living here? And fortunately for me, Wyoming has the most robust limited liability company statutes in the United States. In fact, Wyoming invented the limited liability company. And also is adamantly in front of the privacy issues that we have here in the United States. And it's at the top of the asset protection trust category. So I got my son to come join me. We opened up a commoditized legal services firm using the World Wide Web to provide democratized legal services to the public.
That's fascinating. And so that's been really your focus from that point until now.
Yes. We've been doing that for the past 8 years. We've grown from myself and my son to approximately 35 employees. We've got our websites. We are in every state in the United States in terms of the formation of LLCs and corporations. And I think we're leading the state of Wyoming in the number of LLCs that we've filed. And I also think we're also leading the state in terms of the number of asset protection trusts that we do.
This is going to be an interesting conversation because I really don't know anything about the benefits of a Wyoming LLC and kind of how that functions inside of, you know, let's say I'm based in Tennessee, right?
Right.
So what does someone like me do when forming a new LLC? I mean, because now you're forming an LLC in Wyoming, but how does that benefit me?
You know, it depends on where you're making your money. You know, if you're in Tennessee and you've got an operating company making money there, you're probably going to do a Tennessee limited liability company. And that will provide you a certain amount of protection. But to provide the ultimate protection, you would have a Wyoming LLC owning that Tennessee LLC. and then you would own the Wyoming LLC. What you do is that once you establish an operation and you get a working capital reserve, you strip the assets out of that Tennessee LLC up into the Wyoming LLC to provide you the protection of Wyoming law, which will be much more robust than Tennessee law would be. We have charging order protection and we have limited liability to the members. What that means is that as a member of an LLC, the debts of that LLC, if it were to fail, are not going to become your debts, and they're not going to be able to attach you or your assets with respect to those debts. Second thing is that if you're in a partnership with individuals and you have the membership interest in that LLC, you and those partners, you will not be subjected to, at the LLC level, you will not be subjected to the debts of those partners. So if you have a partner who goes broke or a partner that ends up in debt problems or a partner who ends up in a divorce, those liabilities cannot be enforced against that LLC. You have what they call charging order protection. In Wyoming, that's sacrosanct. So what ends up happening is the way that we squeeze creditors in Wyoming is we provide for unequal distribution. So let's say you're in a partnership with three other people. One of those people ends up with a creditor problem and one of the banks in Tennessee attaches that membership interest. They can't sell that membership interest. It's not transferable.
Sure.
So they have no liquidity event happening because it has that interest. All they could do is say, look, to the LLC, if and when you make a distribution, you have to make it to us. So we go, okay, that's easy. So at the end of every year, we declare a distribution and we send a K-1 to that creditor. What we don't do is make an actual distribution to pay for the taxes that accrue to the distribution that was made. So let's say that we send $100,000 to each creditor. You get $100,000 and each one of your three partners get $100,000, but you don't take the $100,000 right away. What you do is that you keep the $400,000 in the LLC, you send a K-1 to the bank. Now they owe taxes against that $100,000, but you didn't give them the cash to pay the tax. So you do that for a couple of years and you squeeze them out to the point where they eventually get back to negotiating with you to take over that interest or to dispel that individual partner's liability. So that's called a squeeze. And that's what you're allowed to do under Wyoming law.
That's interesting. Yeah, that's a strategy. I guess because the challenges like you're describing there was when you suddenly have a new partner that you never brought in as a partner.
Yeah.
And now you have somebody else just saying how the deal is going to be run or how your business is going to be operated. And we already have our silent partners in business, the government. And so I don't need somebody else coming alongside.
You know, I agree with you wholeheartedly there. You know, I had a client of mine out of Florida that he had three partners and one of the guys died and they ended up in a partnership with his wife. And more importantly, they ended up in a partnership with his wife's attorney. And they finally just said, you know, we're done with you. We're not dealing with you. And just completely closed them out. And they eventually came back to the table and negotiated a justiciable, you know, a realistic settlement.
Right.
As a result of that ability to start a strong arm.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's fascinating. That is fascinating. Yeah. Because again, you know, you don't want partners in the business, you know, telling you how to run things. And so what would you have to do then? Just hold your, because you can't make distributions, no one gets distributions. I mean,
you know, that's a question. You may be able to say, look, we're going to give $100,000 in distributions and send a K-1 to each one of those partners, but you only make a distribution to three of the four partners.
Right. Wow. That's interesting. That's next level tactic. You know, just things you don't think that much about. And so then would that be from, let's say, again, we're using the Tennessee to Wyoming LLC example. Would that be done at the Tennessee LLC level or at the Wyoming LLC level?
Well, either one. It depends on what they want to come after. So what you would be doing at the Tennessee level is you'd be sending money up to the Wyoming company. Right. Any excess cash over your working capital level would be sent to the Wyoming company. So Wyoming doesn't have a state income tax, but it does flow out to you under a K-1. But at the end of the day, Wyoming ends up reposing all that money in Wyoming. Right. So you strong arm them in two different ways. They may be able to do something in Tennessee, but they can't do it in Wyoming.
Interesting.
So, yeah. So, you know, what you end up doing is that you've got Tennessee has one member. That's the Wyoming company.
Right.
And the Wyoming company has the four members who all reside in Tennessee. Right. So then you can't force onto Wyoming law something that you could in Tennessee. You can try. But if you come into Wyoming and you've got a Tennessee judgment that says do this, Wyoming courts will not recognize it. We have a specific statute that says Wyoming law applies. And if the Tennessee courts didn't get it right, we'll set that judgment aside and enter a separate judgment.
That's fascinating. Let's talk a little bit about, I know we kind of got into the weeds on that, but that's a really intriguing just way of thinking through how you deal with asset protection. I mean, would there have been a way before we shift gears here, would there have been a way to set that up on the front end such that if you end up with a partner that you never intended on having, that they have no say or they have no voting rights? I mean, is there a way to kind of structure that, in the operating agreements from the outset?
You can if you do it in Wyoming, but in a lot of states, they're not going to accept that type of contractual drafting to disappoint a creditor of one of those members.
Right.
But in Wyoming, you specifically can't do it.
Right. That's intriguing. I guess they could just throw that out of the operating agreement if they said, "Hey, look, this clause is unenforceable, so that's out." And now this creditor's part of the company.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. So you've got a consensual arrangement with your partners.
Sure.
Why would you want to make that a non-consensual arrangement with one of your partner's creditors? You just don't want to do it. So this allows you to force a settlement on that. It's going to disrupt your business enough.
Right.
Why would you allow them to dictate terms to you? If you've ever sat down with a bank's attorney trying to negotiate with them, it's almost impossible. So what you do is you negotiate with a hammer, and this is your hammer.
Right. Right. That's intriguing. Let's shift gears and talk a little bit about privacy. I know one of the things that you really focus on is the privacy side of business. And I know from this side of the table, I'm pretty good at finding owners of LLCs. I'm pretty good at locating, because we're looking to buy apartment complexes or something else or whatever it is, if it's a unique asset. It's not that hard to find the owners of most of these companies. So what are you guys doing, and what and why are you guys advocating for privacy on the business side?
Let's start from the very beginning. And this is what Wyoming law allows you to do. And there are other states that allow you to do this as well, but not all of them. By far, we're in a distinct minority, but I also think Wyoming exceeds it. You have a right to privacy in your private life and your personal life.
Sure.
You just do. You are not required to disclose everything that you're doing to everyone out on the street. And the limited liability company in Wyoming is formed anonymously. We form them on behalf of our clients. We file our annual reports on behalf of the clients, and the clients are never disclosed to the public as a result of that. Now, you do have to disclose who the ultimate beneficial owners are of an LLC to the government. The Department of Treasury, the Internal Revenue Service, when you pull up an employer identification number, your bank. You've got to disclose your identity to those people, but that's a consensual disclosure. It's just not out on the street available to people. So that anonymity allows you to conduct your business in private, so that if somebody wants to come in and sue the LLC and says, "Well, who are the members of the LLC?" We don't have to disclose that to them because it's not relevant for purposes of the suit. And we can defend that in court and have it defended. The second aspect of it is if you use a law firm to form your LLC, you've got the attorney-client privilege, which is enforceable in a court. And you also have a responsibility of confidentiality to that client. I'll just give you an example. You form your LLC through our firm. We don't disclose it to anyone. You form that LLC through one of these formation services. They can sell that information to subsequent services, subsequent advertisers, and they know who you are, and they can come and solicit services from you. Yep. That's not going to happen with us.
Right. Right. Yeah. I think that's an interesting point here, because somebody could be bringing a lawsuit at your lawsuit against your company. And yet, even by the time they make it to the court, they still don't know exactly who the person or persons are that they are suing.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. They come in and they do these fishing expeditions because they want to bring members in and sue the members individually and then have to extort a settlement out. And the second aspect of Wyoming law is we have what they call the closed liability company supplement, or the closed corporation supplement. It basically dispels all the formal regulations that pertain to a corporation. You don't have to have minutes. You don't have to have meetings. You don't have to have any of these things. All you have to do is don't commingle your personal assets with the company assets. Don't pay personal bills out of the company bills. And don't commingle the monies between the LLCs that you have. You do that, and the rest of it's not. The rest of it will not affect the vitality of that asset protection within that LLC. So at the end of the day, you've got all these protections built into Wyoming law that you don't have in many, many or most other states.
Mm, that's fascinating. Yeah, absolutely fascinating. I need to continue this conversation off air, because this is absolutely intriguing. Give us some real life examples of some things that you've seen where, you know, this has played out well for the people who've planned properly, and then maybe hasn't played out well for the people that didn't have these protections in place.
That's a great question. We had just, I believe it was like earlier this week or late last week, we had a client who was in the process of investigating an LLC as to whether or not they should sue that LLC and the members of the LLC for a business deal that had gone sideways. They could not find out who all of the members were of that LLC. They knew who the manager was because that's who they'd been dealing with. They couldn't find any assets in that LLC. And we can talk about that in a bit. It's called equity stripping. And they couldn't find any assets in the LLC, couldn't find who the owners were in the LLC. And so they made the decision not to sue. Mm. That's your most effective settlement right there.
Right.
You've gotten over that first hump. And law firms and business owners have become fairly sophisticated about researching before they enter into litigation. If litigation is expensive, and if there's no pot at the end of the rainbow, why would you pursue it? You're just throwing good money. And what I've seen again and again and again in over 40 years of practice is people just stupidly go into litigation, turn all their personal lives over to an attorney who runs up hundreds of thousands of dollars in bills, gets a great judgment, and nobody can collect a dime. So what was the purpose of it? So I think businesses have gotten better in ascertaining what the collectability of a judgment is going to be before they even entertain the initiation of a suit. And that's what this allows you to do. In between the anonymity and the equity stripping and all the things that we do, we make it very difficult for people to find anything. There's no pot at the end of the rainbow. Or if there is, they're going to have to engage in so much litigation that at the end of the day, they either settle it or they don't even pursue the claim.
Right. Yeah, I love that idea there that you said that the best suit is the one that never happened.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, so you call that a favorable settlement, you wouldn't even know that they entertained the idea of suing you. So you may have 10 suits going on, but you may have gotten rid of 90 that the people that say it's not worth the effort.
Was there something your client should have done differently? Because now that they're investigating this LLC with a deal that went sideways, I mean, it seems like they should have known some of that information as far as beneficial owners and things like that up front before they started doing business, no?
Well, that's a good point, isn't it? You should know who you're doing business with. And if they don't have the managerial ability or the financial ability to do what it is that they're saying to do, don't give them money.
Right.
Don't engage in the business. It's pretty simple. It's a matter of looking at yourself in the mirror and saying, look, I'm responsible for doing this, and people don't have to volunteer to you.
Right.
If they want to do business with me, this is what's going to be required of them. And the other thing is if you lend money, you can get guarantors. Don't lend the money to the LLC unless the individual members are willing to guarantee it. You didn't do that. So now you're upset. So you're going to rely on the law to break through the LLC barriers into the memberships and member pockets. And the law prevents that. But you can agree to do otherwise. So why didn't you do that? So that's your credit manager's issue there.
Right. Yeah. And that's a great point, is that if you're lending money to an LLC, you got to get personal guarantees. I've done that both ways, and you bring up a pain point, because I know I've got some out there right now that don't have the personal guarantee side of things. So I'm exposing myself on stuff that I hadn't even really thought about. So
and, you know, at the end of the day, you get a heightened rate of return by not having the security.
Right,
but that's the risk you take.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And it sounds like this conversation kind of reminds me. What was it? Not Matchstick Men. It was the one where the guy ends up forging all the checks. You know, he's the one that went to work for the FBI or the CIA, somebody in the end, that was just telling them, hey, here's all the ways that I can defraud the banking system. I can defraud, you know, I can forge checks. And I can't remember what his name is or what the movie.
I remember that movie. I had about 25 years ago, I had an FBI agent who was at the end of his career, used to call me up for advice on what was going on in these scams.
Right.
I would say, okay, here's what they're doing. It's great. Thank you.
Right. Right. And so you've kind of got it from both ways as well, whereas you can show, hey, here's how to protect yourself. And then you on the other side can say, you know, here's the way to dismantle this, because you understand it, you know, inside and out both ways. So if somebody hasn't taken the right steps, then, you know, you can kind of help on that front as well. It's really interesting. And the idea obviously behind this conversation is not that we're looking to take advantage of people or do anybody wrong or to, you know, defraud investors. But the idea is to protect yourself and set up the right parameters and frameworks such that your business can function efficiently without the outside noise of unnecessary lawsuits, partners you didn't necessarily want as partners. I mean, the things that they can all go wrong.
Yes, exactly right. You know, and it's not that difficult to structure it up front.
Right.
I mean, everything's there. It's quick. It's inexpensive. It's a tenth of the cost of what it was 20 years ago. So if you're not taking the time to protect yourself on the way in, you know, come on, are you a serious business person or not?
Right. Right. Yeah, that's gold. I absolutely love that. This has been a fascinating conversation. We're at the end of our time here. But, you know, I've got the same four questions that I always ask everybody who comes on the show. And I know these are going to be real estate related questions. You know, take it how you want. Maybe you would advise something on the legal side of stuff, but I'm going to ask the same questions and I'd love to hear your feedback.
Great.
First question is this. If I gave you just $20,000 to invest in real estate and you had no previous real estate investing experience, what would you do with it and why?
That's pretty easy. I would find somebody who does know something about real estate. I would become one of their silent investors and I'd watch everything that they did for a 5-year period and then I'd start to duplicate it.
Right. That's awesome. I love that. If you could help our listeners avoid just one mistake in real estate, what would it be and how would you avoid it?
Oh, in real estate itself, I think I would avoid anything that looks a little bit too frothy. Look at the fundamentals of the business and take a very realistic appraisal of that business. I know that I had an individual I was speaking with the other day who said there's more money on the street looking for real estate investments now than I can deal with. It's a pretty clear indication that you should probably think smaller and you should always make sure that your cash flow matches your debt. If it doesn't, you've got the ability to stay in it long enough so that it does. Because in the long term, real estate will almost always work out, but in the short term, it might not.
Right. That's sound advice. That's absolutely sound advice. I love that. That was great. Question number three is this. When it comes to investing in the world, what's one thing you're doing to make the world a better place?
That's pretty interesting. You know, we started this company a number of years ago, and the idea has been to drive the price of things down. So when I was dealing with my son, I've been involved in technology companies in Silicon Valley before. And I said, look, my goal is to put every attorney in the LLC environment out of business because they simply cannot afford to operate at the prices that we do. So we democratize the access that people have to forming LLCs and corporations and putting together a viable business structure. So I actually had a guy who stopped into my office in Sheridan. He dropped in unannounced. He was from Oregon. He was a pastor at a local church there in Oregon. He says, bless you. He said, you have done something for us that no other attorney has ever done. You gave us a great product at a tenth of the price. So when we started this company, my son said, well, how do we price it? I said, Drew, in technology, you're always racing for the bottom on what the price is going to be. Let's just start it there. That way we won't have competitors. So that's what we did.
I love that. I love that. And if you can find a way to do that and remain profitable, all the better.
Absolutely.
That's fantastic. Mark, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, what is the best way to do that?
Just go onto our website. It's Cloud Peak Law or WyomingLLCAttorney.com. And you can reach us there. We've got a full staff of people who are there to answer questions and get you going on the process. The process is quick and efficient. We form an LLC within 24 hours. You've got an online portal. It gives you access to all your electronically signed documents. And we do that. We've got a security system that exceeds what banks in the country have. So you're very secure on that.
That's fantastic. Mark, thank you so much for your time today. I do appreciate it.
Sam, thank you. Good talking to you.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.